New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Ashley Williams, an award-winning journalist and the founder and CEO of Ruzar, the social media platform built by millennials for the millennial creator. She's also the founder of Millennials Change, an event series created to bring together millennials and to inspire them to make endless ripples that can positively change the world. Ashley is passionate about using journalism, social media, and live experiences to inform and empower her generation. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
So can you tell us a bit more about Ruzar and what inspired both the name and how did you come up with the idea for this platform?
Sure. So my background is actually journalism. I used to be a journalist for a number of different media entities. And growing up, actually, what got me into journalism was I dealt with a number of different teen issues like depression and cutting and eating disorders. And it was really hard in overcoming those issues as a teenager. And my high school actually had a television studio, and because I love writing and I loved like things dealing with communication. And I felt like part of my journey in overcoming the issues that I was facing also was like just getting more involved in school and trying to uplift myself really. And my television station at the school, I got in touch with the television advisor and he really liked my personality. And he suggested that because really I'm always been like a really bubbly person, even with the issues that I was dealing with secretly, I guess you could say. He suggested that I interview and be a host for the television station. And so I did, and I actually hosted a show that they had on there, but I also developed my own show called Teen Issues Overrated, and it focused on issues that myself and other peers were dealing with. And so it was really a way for me to use my love of helping other people as well as finding ways to also identify that I'm not the only one dealing with different issues. And so it really was a powerful tool for me and also really made me love journalism and really want to do that as a career. And so after thankfully I was able to overcome those issues. And so I ended up majoring in journalism at college. Fast forward, as I was working at NBC, I'm really thinking about an idea around Ruzar at the time, although I was really interested in getting into reporting. And at this point in my life, I was a producer in training in their news associates program. And I really became fascinated by water for some reason. And I loved, my minor was Spanish, and I just kept thinking of this idea of how like a droplet could really just spread and how the impact that it can make on water. And I was just like, wow, that is so fascinating and so beautiful. And I was thinking about this idea around creating a platform for young people and helping young people through issues that they were going through and having them to be able to connect with one another. And after I left NBC, I took a moment to kind of focus on that a little bit, but it really wasn't something that I pursued wholeheartedly until after I was with USA Today, or while I was with USA Today, actually, and then decided to pursue full time. But pretty much, I just really wanted to create a company around this idea of the ripple effect and how on water, or just even with one person, they could share their thoughts and make an impact. And so I was looking at different Spanish words, saw the word Ruzar, which means to ripple or to curl, and was like, you know, that's the name that I would want to name my company. And so I kind of just changed the spelling and it became Ruzar.
Very interesting. And I like that sort of very chaos theory a bit, you know, butterfly wings and storms and Peking. So when you were, I mean, you sort of tossed off, you know, a journalist for a while, but you had a very impressive career. So, you know, kudos to you. And while you were at USA Today, you helped create, produce, and host a show for the network called Long Story Short. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you very much. Well, actually, when I started USA Today, it was really cool because the team that I was working with was essentially a startup within USA Today. We were a newly created team, and our goal was to help USA Today create shareable, fun content that was really buzzworthy. And it was really interesting because we've also were trying to find like social things that were really creating a lot of interest and making it more digestible for audiences. So with my love of creating video and helping them with a lot of video elements, it became that they approached me about creating a show around topics that were really digestible and interesting and kind of having like a fun type of style with the show. And so we created a show called Long Story Short, which was a way where we could share things with audiences in a fun way that really allowed me to showcase my personality even more. And also talk about some interesting issues, like even dealing with the cigarettes law that was going on or other things that were really more kind of harder for audiences to understand, like Bitcoin. We did a video around that. But it was really a great experience because I've learned so much about creating content and making it shareable. And also, while I was helping them with the video series, I also helped them with another video series that took off called Inspiration Nation. And the goal of that series was also to help audiences become inspired, but it was like a newly created show, but it ended up becoming actually one of their top series. And it made me realize how much people loved inspirational content and how this was something that was really important to audiences. And I've always loved inspirational content. So with my interest for creating things around giving young people a voice as well as things that were inspirational kind of drove me to wanting to create Rosario even more.
Right, right. Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting, so you were working in journalism and you have actually seen it evolve. I mean, when you started creating this buzzworthy, shareable content, was data being used to help track and shape the content at all? Or was it really a feel and then you'd get a reaction and then you'd go for it? I mean, how free were you from the data?
Yeah, I mean, the data was really important, actually. We looked at the number, and even as I was working as the host for the show, I did a lot of things dealing with producing as well and like with helping out with the homepage of even just USA Today's entire platform, as well as even with our own page that we had. But so much of the content that we produced was seeing how it was sharing. Like I would go on our different network social media sites and see how our content, because essentially the content that we would create on our team went out to a lot of different television stations and newspapers. They would like copy like or like reproduce the content. And so, or either just take what we had, but it would have like the same, I believe it was like the same requisite number so we could track it.
Okay.
And so we would see how is that content performing? How is it like the way that we're using the title or the way that the image that's with that content piece, how is that like really influencing the number of clicks of how people are reacting to it? And then we would see how many shares it was getting or how many people were reacting to it across these social media platforms and then also even just from USA Today, how many people were reading it and visiting it and how many minutes were they staying on it? So it was very much centered around data and understanding what makes things shareable. But then it was kind of surprising sometimes because things that we would think would really do well wouldn't. And, you know, it could be because maybe we were trying to take a different angle on something that was happening newsworthy, but, you know, people were already like moving on to the next thing or like the way we approached it, like the opening paragraph could have been different. So there are so many different ways of looking at content, but it was very interesting, I think, because from even being at NBC and working with the different programs and then going to radio, just seeing how digital was changing so quickly. And I feel like being at USA Today was such a paradigm shift for me, seeing how things were changing. Because at that time too, BuzzFeed was really taking off even more, Upworthy, all these different kind of like viral platforms. So it was very interesting.
Right, right. So where do you see, so this is, you know, where it trended. Would you see do you see anything particular in the future for journalism, things that are happening that people should all be anticipating?
I think that it's going to, you know, I think the thing happening right now, which is interesting, so much of it is being like how social media is impacting the revenue for different companies and how advertising with digital advertising is affecting companies and the way that they're approaching it and having it be either like even BuzzFeed was doing more things with native advertising, but then they're kind of switching over now to a different model. So it's like, it's going to be interesting. I feel like how content marketing is going to be really playing a huge role in the way that audiences identify with content. And I feel like so much of the approach around like banner ads and things like that, which baby boomers or other generations besides millennials were used to seeing and like engaging with, my generation is no longer really, or
I don't think like, any, really, but like with banner ads, I think I read a statistic and you know, that you're more likely to climb Mount Everest than click on a banner ad. I mean, which is why I was sort of surprised that BuzzFeed, who had never had banner ads, is just adding them. And it almost seems like they'll take your money, but
it's
not really where any brand should be spending, regardless of who their target is. It just doesn't strike me. I think so. It's interesting. You're really seeing the revenue piece and how that shifts and then what that means for content, even journalism and viewing journalism as content versus just news. Is that fair?
Yeah. And the other thing is, so I was reading this other article that I think it was on Ad Age, and they were talking about how the chief brand officer of Billy Procter & Gamble, like, is changing the way advertisers are, like, they're going to be spending their money. Like, and a lot of it has to do with the brand positioning and how like brand positioning, what the brand is actually doing for the content, if the numbers are really meeting what the brands are looking for in terms of the reach and analytics. So I feel like it's going to cause a lot more media companies really to really take hold of like the messaging that, I mean, obviously with news, it's, you know, you're reporting the news. It's a way of actually getting information to people, but so much of it, I think, also has to do with the way that the brand is being highlighted through the way that they're targeting or positioning news. So I feel like so much of it is going to be the readers really taking even more so of a contributor model, really even taking part more into the news and what's happening in their different areas, because so many of the costs for creating content have cut, like so many of the newsrooms are getting cut. So it's going to be a much more unique approach in how people are actually getting involved in the news and also the positioning of that, because if they position things well in terms of the way they're showcasing their content, then it's going to make more advertisers want to be a part of that too. You know, so it's like, it's a lot of frenzy going on. And I feel like, so it's just a lot of digital, the pieces of people trying to figure out how to actually create content that is viral, but also creating content that is approachable, that makes brands feel comfortable putting advertising by it.
Right.
So it's
brand
so
safety.
Many things. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I'm interested in, another challenge which content creators have is discovery. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I'm interested in is, well, or two pieces, is what makes Rezaar different from other social media platforms or other content platforms? And then how do you promote the discovery of your content? How do people discover your site? How do they discover what's on there?
Yeah, I think, so we've done a lot of different research studies and understanding what is it that millennials see appealing based on the original thesis of creating a platform that is empowering, that also gives millennials a voice, but it's really allowing them to be that pivotal shaker and creator in the content that they're making, understanding what makes them this appealing to them. And what we found is that so much of it has to do with the fact that it is meaningful and inspiring, and that it is really connecting with the issues that this generation is dealing with. And so, and having them really have a voice on those issues. I think, and the approach that we're using is also from my own pain points that myself and other people on the team have dealt with as we've gone into our own journalism careers. For example, having more places on campus where we could actually develop our portfolio. One of the things that I dealt with in school, which was great because I was around so many journalism students, but also there were a limited amount of opportunities. And then also having to get the quote unquote more experience. Well, more experience comes from really developing a portfolio that is professional, that speaks to who you are and what you can actually do. And I feel like for a lot of the creators that we've had, and also the students that we work with, because we have a college network, which is part of our reach, is that this is allowing them to get those experiences that they need in order to get to where they want to be, even if it's just a part of that journey, where we want to be the place where they can turn to develop those skills that they need. And part of our, you know, I realizing that is a pain point that we can help them fulfill. Additionally, helping them to connect with other millennials like them who are going through similar issues as them, which goes to things that I dealt with as even a teen, and then being able to have a social space for that.
Right. So to make sure I understand it best, is it a combination of a content platform as well as a social platform, or is the social piece and that support piece going on behind the scenes that you're actually creating a structure in the way that some of these official, you know, news, internet, businessy things, so that people are getting a really parallel experience that they would in some of these more, traditional places, so that they can say, look, I've worked here and I've had content here and I've learned here, and therefore I have true, real, valid experience. Mm-hmm. Or is it that you also have a social channel as part of what you're doing? Just help me understand how does it bleed together?
Yeah. So I think it is basically the twofold, right? I mean, it's really allowing them to have a place where they can create content. And from a lot of the brands that we are partnering with or in the works of partnering with, allowing the brands to also, we leverage that so that they are able to connect with creators who are creating content that can speak to different things relating to the brand. And then the millennials are able to get experience around that too, that is professional. Then additionally, also having the social space, which is really important to millennials to be able to interact with one another and to be able to share in those experiences on a global platform. So it's really twofold.
What is your economic model then? Is it through these brand sponsorships? Is that how you generate revenue? Is it through data that you collect on visitors or creators? What is the revenue model that supports the structure?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with subscription packages that we have for content campaigns that we do with brands. The other piece is our millennial event series called Millennials Change, where we are allowing brands to be able to sponsor the event series and also take part in that as being speakers or showcasing their products or services that they have during those event series. And additionally, even through data and understanding that we're gathering through research that we've also are conducting through our platform.
Now there are two actually things that I thought were really interesting. And one is the inspiration piece, which you've mentioned a few times. And then I had read an interview that you had with another outlet, and you talked really frankly about your own personal spirituality and motivation. Mm-hmm. And that isn't always associated with the millennial generation. I mean, at least not publicly. I mean, I think maybe a sort of non-denominational spirituality is, but not any specificity. And so I'm wondering if that's not the case, that sort of perception is not accurate, or if, you know, how does that feed into what you're doing?
Well, I think that's really interesting actually too, that you've pointed that out as well, because it was funny. I was reading an article recently this week. I love reading things that are happening and dealing with millennials and articles or research going around that and Nature. And so there was an article dealing with millennials in like the UK and how they're like lacking a sense of affiliation with a religion, and even Pew Research has done studies around this. And so it really is true that my generation is, not necessarily affiliated with different religious affiliations. And I think it is the case, but I also believe that, you know, we're also growing into being who we are. And I feel like for me, my faith has always been important to me, and it's been something that has helped me through a lot of different things that I've gone through. And it's, you know, even in different points of my career, it's almost like, do you share a lot about it, or how, you know, where you stand? But I've also realized that as I've gotten older, being true to myself and so, and things that I believe, and I never want to, even through my company or in that sort of way, like push that on anyone, because I feel like everyone is entitled to their own beliefs and their understandings. But for me, I feel like I just want to make that point that these are things that I believe in, you know, even if a person doesn't coming from our platform or in that story of engaging with our content, at least if I can live my life in the best way that I believe to be, hold true to my values and my faith, and hopefully, you know, maybe it will inspire someone in a different way. And maybe even if not the way of coming to the same religious beliefs that I have, but maybe it will inspire them in some other way. So and going back to the whole idea of the ripple effect, hopefully my life will inspire other people or empower other people and millennials and whatever affiliations they believe.
Well, it's interesting, I think, because you have the popularity of inspiration and the hunger for meaning, and where that is anchored can be various, but the need for meaning is something that you're percolating, that is coming up. But another piece linked to that, which I'm curious, sort of, you know, you launch this, you're supporting these young people, they are your generation, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets old, everybody ages. It's going to be Gen Z. It already is. They're already like, oh, forget millennials. We're into Gen Z. So as, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, look at me and I'm, you know, Methuselah or something, you know. But anyway, specifically, you know, do you, as Rezar, as you age, mm-hmm. do you shift so that you are empowering youth, whatever mm-hmm. youth is, or mm-hmm. do you age and help people cope with aging? And they're very different, you know, like when you're young and the world is your oyster, you think, I'm awesome. This is great. And then you get old and you're like, I'm still awesome. Why is nobody paying attention? And that can be a real, drag. So I guess what have you thought about that? I mean, obviously you're in the thick of it now, but when you look out and you do your 5-year plan, mm-hmm. your 10-year plan, mm-hmm. what are you thinking?
Yeah, I feel my gut, my hope and dream is for it to, we will develop it into being in different aspects of the platform. And maybe it will be, we've talked about this as a team as well. And it's something that will eventually evolve into is, and especially it's funny too, because actually one of the brands I was speaking with was like, so are you guys going to be doing something with Generation Z? And it's like, oh, great. I'm glad, you know, it was really nice for them to see what we were already doing and hopefully that we would do that really for like the next generation. So we will continue to evolve the platform to be in different aspects, like have maybe one realm for millennials, one realm for Generation Z, always like the next generation platform. And I think it will evolve into being that. And
sort of giving voice to youth.
Exactly. Around the world. Exactly. And I think just from it, all goes back to when I was when I was a teen and just dealing with all the issues that I dealt with and wanting to help young people through those things that they're also going through. And I think also going back to the meaning part and like the idea, even though they're not, which is really interesting as you bring that too, like even though they're not identifying with religion affiliation necessarily, but the idea that they're looking for more purpose. And I feel like finding that on social media right now, because there's so many things that are happening on the social media platforms that exist, that it's causing a lot of them, even the research that he shows, to have like more depression or anxiety based on what's happening there. And so our conversations are on our platform are, you know, don't feel like based on what people are sharing that like you're the only one dealing with this. So it eases that depression or anxiety. And that's what we aim to do for all generations upcoming, is to be this uplifting space where hopefully they will not feel that angst or anxiety, but feel as though they're not the only one dealing with this and that they can live their best life, and we're inspiring them to do so.
Right. I mean, it's very interesting, the documentation around the depression, because you have this sensation that everybody is having a fantastically beautiful life except for you. And it's faux. And even if you know it's faux, because you yourself know what you post or don't post, or what you share or don't share, it's still very depressing, you know, and how do you tune out and how do you tune in, and creating just an inspiration space where maybe it isn't all about looking at yourself and inward focus, but what you can do and how you can participate outwardly focused. And I have to bring up the person who connected us in the connection and said that Ashley can give you great insights into millennials, including how they would rather save the world than save a baby falling off a building. And I thought, well, I don't know how I'd feel about that being said. So I guess, how accurate is that statement? Am I an old bag for reacting like, I don't know, explain.
Yeah, that really actually surprised us on the team as well. And it really surprised me. And so what we were thinking was maybe they could really see the impact of this one life being saved was around the notion of, even though they could save all these other lives, the one life, you know, directly saving that one life could mean in some ways saving the rest of the lives in a capacity, like a person, the impact that you would have through your life could, you know, and the impact that it would lead to other things, like going with the ripple effect. So that's what our conclusion was.
It's an interesting sort of, it reminded me of a business ethics course, you know, where you have these impossible decisions that you're supposed to make. And I thought, oh, I don't know. I was actually in a course like that with a bunch of entrepreneurs, and they posed a question, and I don't know, it had to do with my dog, and somebody hits my dog and another person takes the dog and eats the dog. And how do I realize? And I was like, well, is the dog dead? The dog is dead. And I'm like, well, then fine, eat the dog. And he was like, nobody's ever said that. I was like, and this room of cold-hearted entrepreneurs, I'm like, well, if the dog is dead, it's dead.
That's really funny.
And I think he was very mystified by that. And so leaping into, mm-hmm. you're an entrepreneur. So you had mm-hmm. been a journalist, and in many ways, especially, you know, freelance mm-hmm. journalism, you're a sole mm-hmm. proprietor, but you know, being an entrepreneur and creating a business and growing the business and being recognized for growing the business in the way you have, that is a different risk profile, if you will. So at what point it's a kind way to put it, right? So you started it as a mm-hmm. side project. What was the point that made you say, I'm all in, I'm going to be this full time?
Well, you know, really there was a story that I was doing on, well, actually a couple of things. I really believe in life, like you're led, a person is led along their journey to figure out like why they're here, like what their purpose is. And so when I was working at USA Today, I was doing a story on like social media, and I was interviewing this lady who had just created a book, Dana Boyd, around like young people and social media. And I had this idea around what I wanted Rezar to be. But at the time, as a side project, it was simply just like a digital media site. But I kept coming across this research around things that were happening, like the impact social media was causing in a negative way to young people. And I interviewed her around the ideas of what young people were looking for in a platform, and just basically just her research. It was really interesting. And I was actually, I had to come in on a weekend to help with the site, with managing and producing content on the site. And I was, the book was just linked. They used to get all these books, get all these books from people all the time. And this book, and we could take them home and, you know, or have them if we wanted to, because they were free. And I was just really like, oh my gosh, this book is so interesting. And I started reading it. And then we ended up doing a story on social media upcoming within the next week. And then I was like, wow, maybe my thoughts, my hypotheses around like what I'm thinking could really, maybe this is going somewhere. And then we entered into a competition at Harvard. It was like a Lean Startup competition. And I just applied on a whim, because one of these organizations that I was involved in college, they have this newsletter, and they sent out opportunities. And I was like, I'll just apply, see what happens. And then we ended up getting second place with the competition. And at the time we were talking with an investor, and I was really thinking like, oh my gosh, well, maybe this is really a good idea. Like maybe I should really pursue this. And things with the team, based on what was happening and how that the team that I was working on was changing in their model, it just made sense to really pursue this idea. And my parents and especially my dad has always been my biggest supporter with trying things, and, you know, saying like, you only live once, you might as well, you have nothing to lose. And so that's what, I jumped off the cliff. So.
Well, you jumped off a cliff, and you had a safety net and insurance section. Right. So that's
right.
That's always good to have. I recommend that for sure. Well, you know, I have used up so much of your time, and I thank you so much for joining us. We've come to the end of our interview. I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Ashley Williams. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.